Morning, everyone, and as always, welcome to our shir, Freilich and Chanukah, to one and all. And today, I do every year when it comes to Chanukah, so we, instead, rather than speaking about the parasha, we divert to speak about an inyan of Chanukah. It happens to be that the laws of Chanukah are surprisingly complex. I personally have always felt that the most difficult to really get clear from all the Yom Tovim, even Hilchos Pesach, my opinion. So I'd like to speak about a topic today, which is a question comes up very often and really hits on some central points of the laws of Chanukah, and that is a person who goes away for the Shabbos Chanukah. So he's going temporarily to someone else's home. Where is the correct place to light the Neiros of Chanukah, both on Friday and on Motzai Shabbos? Where is the correct place to light? And in the course of discussing this, I hope we will get to discuss also not just the Shabbos of Chanukah, but let's say during the week. Over the years, we've touched upon people who go away from home on business and stay in a hotel and so forth, so we're going to get back to all of those things today. The sheets here were made due to the change in the schedule of the davening, so they were made in great haste. So most of what I'm going to say are not on the sheets, but a couple of the key points are. So basically we begin with trying to understand what the basic mitzvah of Neiros Chanukah, the basic mitzvah, everybody knows it's one of the most beloved mitzvahs that Klal Yisrael has, to light the candles on Chanukah, oil, whatever a person does. So the Gemara tells us in Masechta Shabbos, we have it here on the sheet. This is on Daf Chaval of Amud Beis. The Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, mitzvahs Chanukah, ner ishu beiso. Okay, this is very important. The mitzvah, the way the Chachamim established the mitzvah of Chanukah in its essence was that there needs to be a candle lit, one candle lit for a man and his household. And that's it. One candle. Okay, why is that? So the reason, the understanding here is that the mitzvah of Neiros Chanukah is, the point of it is persume nisa. The point of the mitzvah is to publicize and make famous the miracle that took place. That's the idea of Neir Chanukah. And therefore, we have to envision. The world today is different because we live in the world of electricity, where at night everything is lit up just as much as it is during the day. But in the old world, so at night everything went dark, the streets were dark. So if a person put a candle in the street, which was the original format of the mitzvah of Chanukah, and it's still that way in Eretz Yisrael and most places, that they light the Neiros Chanukah outside, so it was very noticeable. And even one candle was enough. You didn't have to have a tremendous amount because, as we all know, when it's pitch black, when it's dark, so then even one candle does a great deal. So therefore, the mitzvah, in its essence, was to be mefarsim, to publicize the neis, and you put one candle outside the house, and that's it. Okay, and therefore, there was no real point in the essential concept of Chanukah that everybody should light a menorah, really, because you say, what's the difference? We publicize the miracle. In other words, whether it's one candle, five candles, everybody sees it. If there's something unusual that's catching people's attention, that they say, oh, look at this, they have a candle. A candle is lit. So, all right, if that's the case, that a candle is lit, so then people notice. So therefore, the original takana of the Chachamim was Ner Ishu Beiso, made no difference how many people lived in the house. You could have 30 people living in the house, and one candle was sufficient. That was the original takana. Then the Gemara proceeds to say, V'amahadrin Ner Uchalecha Ve'echad. So then, there were those who decided to be Mahadrin. Mahadrin means to beautify the mitzvahs. Okay, we know in general there's an inyan of, by all mitzvahs, so Zeh Keli Van Vehu, there's an inyan of beautifying mitzvahs. When it came to the mitzvahs of Chanukah, so for a reason which we're not going to discuss now, there was a particular interest in beautifying the mitzvah. So the policy was made that now it's going to be that we're going to light Ner L'Cholecha, that everybody in the house, there's going to be one candle for everybody in the house. Okay, that was the first level of Mahadrin. And then the Gemara says, by Mahadrin, Mina Mahadrin, then there came a subsequent development that there were people that wanted to be even more mahadar, even to beautify the mitzvah even more. So what did they do? So I'll just cut to the chase here. There's a question between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, but we hold the halacha like Beis Hillel, that they decided that they're going to, you're going to light one candle for each night of Hanukkah. So therefore, on the first night of Hanukkah, you light one, on the second two, the third three, and so forth. That is the Gemara that speaks about how the menorah is lit. Okay, so in its essence, and the Ikar Hadin remains the halacha, that if it comes down to it, all you need is one candle per household. And that's it. Once you light that candle, everybody in the house is Yotze. Even people who might not be home at the time, we'll see. Even people who might not be home at the time that the candle is lit. That's all you need to be Yotze, the Ikar Hadin, to be Yotze, the essential halacha. However, it's already a time-honored practice that everybody tries to do it in the nicer way, which is the Mahadrin Min HaMahadrin. Yes.
So here, Rebbe's Mahadrin with the Gemara, this was an evolution that happened later on the Mahadrin.
I believe that's true.
Yeah. So what point did Mahadrin happen? What point did Mahadrin
happen? I don't know exactly. I'm not sure. The way I said it is that happened two different times. I'm not 100% sure. That's maybe both at the same time.
In other words, there was Saki and everything at the same time.
The Takana the Chachamim made was Ner Rishabeis. So that there's no question. People on their own. Hanukkah was a yontif, which elicited a great deal of hakaras hatov to Hashem. That's we know that the whole point of Hanukkah is lahodos lahalel. That's why we spend our time saying awanisim and saying halel and so forth, more so than partying, right? Because of the fact that it elicited a tremendous response of appreciation to Hashem. And so therefore, simply stated, people felt that they should be mahadar in this mitzvah. Okay, now, without getting into what we discussed in the past, there is a very great disagreement in the interpretation of this Gemara between the Rambam and the Balei HaTosfos, and that is the question that when you have the mahadrin min ha-mahadrin, so you had three stages. You had the first stage was one candle per household. The second stage was that a candle for each person in the household. And then there's a candle for each night of Hanukkah. The question is, when the third level came in, was that built upon the second level? Meaning that you're lighting a candle for everyone in the household, and on top of that, you're also making for every night of Hanukkah. So therefore, if you had four people in the house, and it was the fifth night of Hanukkah, there would be 20 candles. That's one interpretation. That is the interpretation of the Rambam. However, the Balei HaTosfos did not understand it that way, and they felt that the Mahadrin and the Mahadrin were reneging on what the Mahadrin said. In other words, they were doing away with that. They said, no, don't do that, do this. Instead of lighting one per member of the household, the better way to be Mahadr, to beautify the mitzvah, is to light one candle for each day of Hanukkah. So therefore, on the fifth night of Hanukkah, if there were four people in the household, there would be five candles lit, according to Tosfos. Again, according to the Rambam, there would be 20. Okay, now as we mentioned in the past, this is one very rare situation in Halacha, because usually it's not uncommon that you have a dispute between the Rambam and the Balei HaTosfos. And generally, the Sfardim follow the Psak of the Rambam, he was their man, right? And the Ashkenazim follow the Psak of the Balei HaTosfos, generally speaking. However, here you have, just like Purim v'Nafochu, here it's just the opposite. Here you have that the Ashkenazim follow the Psak of the Rambam, and the Sfardim follow the Psak of the Balei HaTosfos. And therefore, in an Ashkenazic household, so everybody lights a menorah, and everybody lights according to the amount of nights. So like we said, if on the fifth night, if there are four people, you have 20 candles. Whereas by Sfardim, only the head of the household lights the menorah, and he lights according to the amount of people that you have in the house. So on the fifth night, you would have five. Okay, that's why that is. It's a very remarkable thing, very rare that you have such a thing. Okay, that's a different discussion. But this is what we have when it comes to Hanukkah. And thus, we have a very basic difference in practice between Ashkenazim and Sfardim. Okay, now, all of this is fine and good in a normal situation where people are home. Okay, but now the question comes up, what happens if a person is traveling? In other words, a person who's living at home is Yotze with the lighting of the head of the household, Me'ikar Adin. And therefore, theoretically, the person doesn't necessarily have to be home at the time that the candles are lit. It's better if they are, because they get to hear the brachas and so forth, but it's presume nisa if they're home, but it doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't have to be. Okay, now before we get, let me just clarify one other point, right? Other customs that exist in the lighting of the candles, by most people, many people, the question is, does a woman, married woman, have to light her own menorah or a shiyotze with her husband? So here, there is a concept in the halacha called ishtol kagufo, that a wife is considered a part of her husband. They're considered like one unit. And therefore, really, a wife does not necessarily have to light. However, that's up to the woman. If she doesn't want to be that way, then she could say, you know, with all due respect to my husband, you know, but I want to light my own. You could do that too. You could do that too. I think the practice by many people is that the wife does not light, but if a woman really wants to, she could light the menorah herself and make the brachas also if she wants to. Okay, that's number one. Okay, number two is that following along with number, depending on how you handle what I just mentioned, comes the question, do girls light the menorah? So there's a custom. Now we know, by the way, that it's pashut that the chiyuv of hadlakas neres Chanukah applies to women just as much as men, and that's because the Gemara says, even though this is a time-oriented mitzvah, so of course that's a different discussion, because there's a question whether that rule applies to mitzvahs derabanan. But whatever the case may be, the Gemara says, af hein hayu ba'osa hanes. The Gemara says that since the decrees of the Greeks applied just as much to women, very much, the women suffered greatly at the hands of the Greeks. So therefore, they were a basic part of the miracle, and they also contributed to the miracle. The famous incident of Yehudas, who took care of one of the Greek generals, and so forth. So therefore, women are a central part of the Chanes Chanukah. So women have to light a menorah. So as I said, when it comes to a wife, the wife could say, okay, I'm just like my husband, and whatever my husband lights, good enough. Okay? Or if she wants, she can light her own. Now, assuming that you take choice number one, that ishto kagufo, so there are those who say that a single girl should also not light, that she could if she wants, 100%, she can light her own, say the brachas. However, a lot of people have the custom that a girl doesn't do it because of the fact that ultimately she's going to get married and then she's going to be like her husband. So even now, she doesn't do it. There are other reasons given also, but that's basically a practice that a lot of people follow, but other people follow that the girls light as well. So there you have it. Okay, so that's the din of men and women lighting the menorah. Now, the question is, what happens if a person goes away? A person goes away. So here, the conventional wisdom, what people think, is really not accurate. Okay, most people think that you go away from home, great, take a menorah, go light the menorah wherever you are, and even though, let's say, only the husband is going away, the wife is staying home with the family, the husband is going away on business, and he's going to go away for a couple of days, so he'll take his own menorah and light, and of course the wife is also going to light in the house because the kids are home. So first of all, if she herself has the practice of lighting on her own, she'll light, and the kids will light. Okay, now again, this is, we're talking now in the Ashkenazic world, where everybody lights a menorah. The Sephardic world, where only one person lights a menorah, it's a little more complicated. But let's just say, for the purpose of this discussion, in the Ashkenazic practice. So now, a person goes away from home. So everybody assumes you run to the store, they have Baruch Hashem nowadays these very convenient little portable menorahs that you can take with you, even oil menorahs, and you take and you light it over there. The question is that necessary? The question is a few questions. First of all, do you need to do it? Second of all, can you do it? Can you do it if the wife is lighting at home? Maybe the husband is yotze with the wife's lighting, so this is superfluous, right? And third of all, the question comes up, can you be yotze in the place that you're lighting? Can you be yotze in the place that you're lighting? Why not? Because one could say that since the institution, the way this mitzvah was set up, is that it's ner ishu beiso, that it has to be lit. There's one candle for a man and his household. Okay, one candle for a man and his household. So it was set up, the mitzvah of ner Chanukah was set up that it should be lit for the house, for the household. So then you could argue that it has to be your house. And if it's not your house, it's ner ish u beso. It has to be. Beso doesn't just mean his family. Beso means his house. In other words, you're lighting that one candle, and that takes care of the house. Because the Chanukah candles, with a big part of the mitzvah, is that I have a house. I'm lighting it by my house. there's a big question of whether a homeless person has to light Hanukkah candles, because where could he light them? Where could he light them? Now, the what this comes down to, if you think about it, is a fundamental question which we've discussed in the past. Is the mitzvah of lighting the Hanukkah candles an obligation on the person, or is it an obligation on the house? Okay? In other words, for example, a mezuzah is a mitzvah that you only have if you have a house. If you don't have a house, a person who, let's say, his entire life was homeless, or his entire life he was a boarder, but he never got married, his whole life was living in someone else's house. So he went through his entire life, never once fulfilled the mitzvah of mezuzah. So is that a problem? So you'll say, no, that's not a problem. Does he have to do tshuva? Does he have to, on Yom Kippur, klap al chet, that I have not fulfilled this mitzvah, I was mevatel the mitzvah? No, because the mitzvah only applies if you have a house. If you don't have a house, you're okay, so you don't have the mitzvah. That's the way it is. Now the question is it like that with Hanukkah also? This is a very big question. So the way a lot of the Mefarshim explain it is that it's really a combination. In other words, it's really a chiyuv. It's a chiyuv on the person, but the chiyuv was set up, the mitzvah was set up to be done by the house. So therefore, it's sort of, if you have a house, then it's a chiyuv on you. That's the way it's established. Now, that being the case, the question is that if I go away, so let's say I go to a hotel. I'm out of town on business. I'm staying in a hotel. So you say, well, okay, assuming, you know, you don't want to move away from the smoke detector or whatever it is, or, you know, you'll do, well, I don't want to say what, right? You'll do different things to make sure that it doesn't go off. So the question is, though, can you be yotze? Is that your house? What makes that your house? It makes you out because you're paying for the room. Okay, you'll say, well, I'm paying for the room. It's like I'm renting an apartment. But not necessarily, because when you rent an apartment, you, one day the phone rings and the landlord says, you know, by the way, I just realized that, you know, you really have a small family. You don't need such a big apartment. And someone just came and they want to rent a large apartment. They have a large family and I don't have one. I only have a small one. So I would like to move you from this small apartment into the larger apartment. Okay, if the landlord said that, you would just hang up the phone. You would say, you can't do that. Because I have a kinyan on this apartment. You can't take that away from me. Okay, whereas if you're in the Hyatt, and they try that on you, they may be able to. Okay, in other words, I don't know exactly the ownership of the room is not the same. It's not to the same extent. You don't have a kinyan on this room. It's like a temporary thing. It's like somebody's letting you sleep in the house for the night. You don't have any rights there. You don't really have any rights there. The thing, okay, they charge you for it because they provide a nice room for you and so forth, some services, but the bottom line is that you have no real kinyan there. So the question is, can you even light a menorah there? So the Gemara says like this. So we continue here. The Gemara says on the same page, on the same side of the sheet, that is, it's a different daf in the Gemara. It's on daf Chaf Gimel and Aleph. Probably the most difficult Gemara in the entire sugya of Hanukkah to really get to understand properly. The Gemara says as follows. Amar Rav Sheshes. Rav Sheshes said that Achsenoi Chayiv B'ner Chanukah. Rav Sheshes said that Achsenoi means a guest. A guest is obligated to light the Chanukah candles. Okay, he's obligated to light the Chanukah candles. Now, what does that mean? So there's a lot of different ways this could be understood. What did he mean by that? Did he mean that even though you're only there temporarily, that's considered your house? Or perhaps he means that even though you're there, but you cannot be yotzei with the lighting of the Baal HaBayis. Okay? In other words, because of the fact that even though there's ner ishu beiso, so it goes without saying that if a person is lighting the Hanukkah candles and they don't want to do the mahadran, they just want to do the basic din. They don't have so many candles or whatever it is. The fear of fire, they don't want to light so many candles. So all you need is one. Right, that's according to everybody. All you really need is one. And that one covers all the members of your household. Who are the members of your household? Your wife, your children. Okay, now what happens if you have a guest? Is he considered a member of the household or not? So you'll say, well, there are different situations. There's a person who's just a temporary guest. There's a person who's a guest who sort of is a boarder, but there are different arrangements of a boarder. Some people who board have only the rights to sleep. other people who board have the rights to sleep and to eat. Okay? So we're going to see in Halacha that this makes a very big difference. So, but anyway, getting back to the Gemara, Rav Sheshe said that a guest is obligated in the candles of Chanukah. Continues the Gemara, Amar Rav Zeira. So Rav Zeira says, Meiresh at first. Ki havina beirav. Now Rav Sheshe was a big Talmud Chacham, as we know from the Gemara, and he was a person who used to go away from home to learn. In the olden times, they didn't have, like you have today, yeshivas with dormitories where people go, where large numbers of people, you know, pick up and relocate, young men go learn in other places, but rather it was sort of done on a person-by-person type of arrangement. If you knew in a certain place there was a great Talmud Chacham who you wanted to learn from, so you would make an arrangement, you would go there. Sometimes the word got out, then other people knew. But you didn't really have the type of yeshiva that you have today, which is really an outgrowth of the Volozhin yeshiva that was the early 1800s. Rav Chaim Volozhiner, one of the great students of the Vilna Gaon, he's considered the father of the modern-day yeshiva style, yeshiva movements, because that he's the one who set up such an arrangement. Prior to that, it wasn't in such an organized manner. So, but people would go away to learn Torah from various gedolim. So Rav Zeira said that originally, before I was married, ki havina beirav, so I would go to someone else to learn. I'd go to yeshiva out of town. So mishtatafna bepriti bahadi ushpiza. So then, when I boarded, I said, how did he go learn out of town? It was too far to commute. So he would stay in somebody's house. He said, but what I did was, when I stayed in the house, is that I used to chip in. I used to make a small payment to the owner of the house, and thereby I was considered included in his lighting of the candles. He said, hashta, but now that I am married, and even after he was married, from time to time he would go away to learn. His wife would allow him to go to learn Torah. So he said, vaday lo tzarichna. He said, now that I am married, I don't have to do this anymore. Why not? Because somebody in my house is lighting for me. So since somebody in my house is lighting for me, so therefore I don't need to do anything anymore. So says the Gemara. Okay, so now what emerges from this are a number of things. What emerges from this, first of all, is, we'll take the last thing first. What comes out is that if a person is away from home and his wife is home, and his wife is lighting, he does not need to light a menorah at all. Period. And that's the halacha, and that's the halacha even today. Okay, that if a person is, let's say, traveling on business, and he's staying in a hotel, and he's not such a brave person, or he doesn't want to, you know, he's very very cognizant, very respectful of the hotel policies, and it says in every hotel contract that you can't light any, you can't smoke in the room, and you can't light any, make fires in the room. So he says, good, I'm a law-abiding person, I want to go by that. So it's very simple. All he has to do is tell his wife, light at home, which she's probably doing anyway, if the family's home, and that's it. Taken care of. He doesn't have to light at all. Not only does he not have to light, but there's a question if he's allowed to. Why? Now you'll say, now 1 minute. Why should that be? In other words, it's one thing you tell me that he could be yotze with his wife. That we see here in the Gemara. That's what Rav Zeira said. Rav Zeira said that now that I got married, so my wife lights in the house and I'm off the hook. So you'll say, yeah, but hold on a second. But didn't we say before that there's a concept of mahadrin, that every person should try to light their own menorah? That's a mahadrin idea. So here, so believe it or not, right? That's what I think intuitively everybody says. I'm going away, I got to take a menorah. I must take a menorah. Okay, but it's not so simple for the following reason. Because there's a very big argument in the Rishonim, we spoke about this once years ago, there's a big argument whether the idea of mahadrin applies in two different locations. In other words, the idea of, what was the mahadrin? The mahadrin was that, okay, originally you lit one candle for the house, finished. Okay, then they said, now let's beautify the mitzvah. So let's have everybody in the house light a menorah. Okay, and let's say by Ashkenazim, that remained even after they said, let's light candles for all the nights. Everybody's going to light a menorah. So there are those who say that, why does it beautify the mitzvah? It beautifies the mitzvah because in this place, there are more candles. So what happens, though, if you're not in the same place? Right? My wife is in Miami, and I happen to be traveling in Texas. Okay, so what? Where am I beautifying the mitzvah? There's candles there and there's candles here. That's not what the hiddur was. The hiddur was that there should be more candles in the original place. But if they're not going to be more candles in the original place, then you're just reverting back to the original, the way the mitzvah was set up, namely that ner ish u'beso, that you only need one per household. And my wife took care of that. So therefore, there is an opinion, this is a big discussion in one of the great Rishonim, Ashkenazic Rishonim, Trumas HaDeshen, that he brings down a very big debate that it's quoted in Taz and Shulchan Aruch, a very big debate that took place on this point. And other people said, no, other people said that that's not the way it is. That Mahadrin just means that there should be more Pursumei Nisa, and therefore, even in two different locations, there's a din of Mahadrin. So this is a very big question. Now, it happened, just to bear in mind, it happens to be that the way we follow the practice of the Mahadrin, right, the way it's done by Ashkenazi Jews is that everybody lights their own menorah, right, and everybody who lights the menorah says brachas. Everybody says brachas, okay, which is a question in its own right. How do you have the right to do that for a hiddur mitzvah and make a bracha, right? You really owe it a mitzvah just with the first lighting. So now you want to make it nicer. So making it nicer, you go ahead and make your own brachas. That's for sure not true, right? We know, for example, that on Sukkot, let's say you have an esrig, and the esrig, it's not such a great one, you know. It's not the nicest esrig in the world, but it's kosher. It's good, right? So you make the bracha in the morning, you make a bracha on that esrog, 100%, and you shook it by the davening, and then later in the day, you come across somebody who has an eye-poppingly gorgeous esrog, right? A drop-dead gorgeous esrog, okay? So you say, wow, can I shake that esrog? Can I take that esrog and use it? But yeah, no problem. So do you say the bracha again? Of course not, right? Why not? Because you yotzei the mitzvah already. So you'll say, yeah, but I'm doing a hiddur mitzvah. It's nicer. It's a much nicer esrog than the one that I had until now. The answer is, so what? We don't say brachas for hiddur mitzvah. Right? So this is also a question. Hanukkah, there's a lot of questions. Right? So this is a good table discussion, right, if you want it. So why do you do this? But whatever the case may be, the halacha is that we do this. That we say the bracha by the Mahadrin. Right now. It, going back to our case, the wife is home in Miami lighting. The husband is in a hotel room in Dallas, and he says, "Well, I have my little portable menorah here that I got in the store. It's with the already ready to go, everything all set up." So the question is, so can you do this? Can you do this? Because again, according to the opinion that holds that there is no hiddur mitzvah unless you're in the same location, you have no right to say the brachas now. Because you're not doing the mitzvah already, your wife did. El amai, you'll say, but I want to do the hiddur mitzvah. But the hiddur mitzvah, not everybody agrees that this is a hiddur mitzvah. Because some people say it's only a hiddur mitzvah if you're in the same location. So therefore, the halacha is, and people are not aware of this, the halacha is that if you're in a hotel room or something, anything like that, and you want to light your own Hanukkah candles, what you have to do is, you have to say that, you have to have in mind that I am not being yotzei with my wife's hadlaka. I am not being yotzei with my wife's light. I do not want to be yotzei with my wife's lighting. And if you did that, so then, according to a lot of people, so then you're not going to be yotzei, because if you specifically don't want to be yotzei, then that's good enough. However, the Mishnah Berurah quotes that some people say that you have no right to do that to cause yourself to make a bracha. Right? In other words, what are you doing that for? Because you want to say your own brachas? So don't say the brachas. What do you have to, who told you it's such a, because you want to say the bracha, so you're making it that I'm definitely not going to be yotzei with my wife's hadlaka. So therefore, in that situation, the Mishnah Berurah brings down that it's, and people are not careful about this. The Mishnah Berurah says in Siman Tafrei Shayin Zayin that in a situation like that where a person wants to go ahead and do his own thing, so he should really light before, he should try to light the candles before his wife lights. He should try to light the candles beforehand, so that way there's no chance that he was yotzei with his wife's hadlaka. There, because it didn't happen yet. Okay, so just give me 1 second, I'm sorry. So this is mentioned here, let's see, he says that the correct thing to do is in other words, he either has to light before his wife lights it, and or if he wants, he does not have to actually light it before that time. But before his wife lights it, he has to have in mind, I don't want to be yotzei with my wife's lighting. Because if he didn't think about it until, you know, he was busy the whole day in meetings, and he shows up 8 o'clock at night to his hotel room, and his wife already lit 2 hours earlier at home. So now it's very questionable, right? So the only way to work this out is that you have to have in mind in advance that I don't want to be yotzei with my wife's hadlaka. Mishabura says even in such a case, it would be better if you heard the brachas from somebody else. But the widespread minhag olam is that people do this. People do it, but I'm just telling you that if you're going to do it, this must be done. You have to have in mind ahead of time, I don't want to be yotzei with my wife's hadlaka. I don't know that you have to do that every single day, and maybe you could do it, you know, in the morning, you could have that in mind. But somewhere along the line, before your wife lights the menorah, you have to have that thought.
Yep, but doesn't that imply a prior arrangement and understanding with his wife?
Yeah, right, okay. I mean, right. No, for sure. In other words, the wife is going to be lighting anyway. But the thing is that, in other words, a lot of times you don't think this through. In other words, everybody intuitively assumes, what do you mean everybody lights menorahs? So who cares if my wife lit? That's very nice. I'm happy she lit. She lit for herself. She lit for the kids. But here I am in Dallas, so I should light my own menorah. That is not so simple. That's not so simple. That you could. With the brachas. If you want to do it out of the brachas, you can do whatever you want. You know, no problem. You can light as many menorahs. You want to light 50 menorahs, you can light 50 menorahs. But the point is as far as being yotzei in a mitzvah, so that it could be you yotzei already. Yeah, yes, sir.
According to what you were saying before, there's not a partial even that you can be yotzei in the hotel room.
So whether you could be yotzei, so that's also true. That's also true whether you could be yotzei in a hotel room, I mentioned at the outset. So it happens to be the minhag olam, and people say that you could be yotzei that, but if there's another choice, it might be better. Now you'll say, here there is another choice. All right, the problem is also, if you're in a place, see, there's one halacha, it's very complicated, and I don't want, we're already, you know, off the charts in terms of the timing of this, so I don't want to go too long, but the point is that, you know, there is a question in halacha, if you're in a place where you don't have a menorah, and you see someone else's menorah, so you have to at least say the bracha. That's called haroah. A person who sees it should say the bracha. You can't say the bracha lahadluk ner shel Chanukah, is not lighting, but he should say the bracha. Sh'asa nisim lavosenu b'yom mehem b'zman hazeh. Yeah, yes.
The wife is lighting for the household.
Yeah.
Does she have to exclude her husband in that case?
So in that case, either she should say I'm not including him. Which I don't know is necessarily so wise, but unless they're really in touch, you know, on a minute-to-minute type of basis, because he may end up in a situation that he may not be able to light. You know, he may think, he's a wise guy, yeah, I'll come to the hotel room and I'll light. And he shows up in the hotel room and he sees that 80 smoke alarms with who knows what and a fire marshal hiding in the closet, right? And then he says, oh my gosh, what am I going to do, right? So in a situation like that, so then now he's stuck. Now, again, sorry, one second. You have to realize that you can't just light a menorah any way you want. This is the point. The point, Nerish Ubeso, it has to be your house in some way, shape, or form. If a guy is traveling on business and in the hotel, they won't let him light. So he says, I have a good idea. I saw there's a park a few blocks away, and at night it's deserted, so I'll go into the park, and I'll go in somewhere into the woods, and I'll light a menorah there, nobody will see, nobody will bother me, I'll light for a half hour, and then I'll blow it out. That's 100% worthless, because of the fact that it has to be your house in some way. You have to be connected to this place. Yeah, go ahead, sorry.
Can you get totally boxed out by Zmanim? For example, you live in Eretz Israel.
I get to that. What happens to you? I'll get to that right now. Okay, so now, what happens? It's a very good question, very common. That what happens is in a different time zone. He's in a different time zone, right? So, and now the question is, you know, they're lighting for me in my house, but when they're lighting in my house, there's no din of Hadlakas Neris right now, or the other way. Well, let's say, for example, the most extreme case of this is a person who lives in Israel comes to America for Hanukkah. Okay, so he comes to America for Hanukkah, and for whatever reason, attending a simcha. Okay, but the wife stayed home. So now comes the night of Hanukkah, let's say first night of Hanukkah, And when it comes time to light in Eretz Yisrael, which is, let's just say, is 5 o'clock in the afternoon, just make up a time, 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So in America, at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, in Israel, it's 10 o'clock in the morning in America. Right? So now, at this point, he has a chiyuv at Lakos Neiros, but his wife's not lighting the menorah. His wife's not lighting the menorah. Or you can have it in the reverse. Right, that they lit the menorah, but by him it was a different time. So the halacha is that it's not a problem. Now what? Yeah, it's not a problem. So the reason why this is not a problem is because the chiyuv, since we said at the outset, the question is: does the chiyuv on the person, is it a chiyuv in itself, or is it only a chiyuv which emanates from your household? In other words, if you have a house, that's the primary chiyuv, and the chiyuv is on the household, and in effect, therefore, the person who owns the house has the light. So if you happen to be taking the case of the Israeli who's in America, so you'll say, well, in America they're not lighting the candles now because it's 10 o'clock in the morning, but in Israel my wife is lighting. Okay, but you say it's not even Hanukkah for this guy. It's not even Hanukkah, but the answer is the obligation to light. It's not specifically because it's Hanukkah. That's not, of course, the only light on Hanukkah. But the primary obligation is on the household. So if the primary obligation on the household, his house lit, his house is lighting when it's Hanukkah, right? In other words, he's in America. He's in America. So for him, it's not Hanukkah. But the obligation was on the house. The household is in a place where it is Hanukkah, and there they took care of it. And there they took care of it. So even though, in effect, the chiyuv is on him too, but it doesn't. That's not primary. In other words, what's primary is the obligation on the house. And my house, it happens to be Hanukkah. And if it happens to be Hanukkah and someone lit, so then that's fine. This is the psak that is brought in the Sefer of Shmuel Kamenetsky. I am pretty sure that others agree to that also. But anyway, that's if you're in a different time. So it is if you're in a different time zone in general that this would be the case. Okay, now.
What about a bachelor who has no?
So now you have all the scenarios come up. So now, okay. So we have to understand what is the status of a bachelor who, let's say, you have a fellow who is not married. He sleeps in one place, but he can't cook. He doesn't know how to cook, so he eats out all his meals. He eats out all his meals, right? One scenario. Okay, another scenario, which was the title of the shir. You have people who go away from the house for a day of Hanukkah. So does that automatically transfer your location? Are you considered, like a new, what do they call it, when they do the census, whether gerrymandering, whatever, in other words, is it considered that now your location has transferred for the day? In other words, I live in North Miami Beach, but I happen to be going to Hollywood for the first night of Hanukkah, and I'm sleeping over there. So all of a sudden now I live in Hollywood, I'm there for one night, I'm coming back the next day, right? So that's called, you live there? Okay, well, there's a question. So what do you do? What do you do? And can a person just say, I'm not interested in being bothered by this. I go into the store, I'll buy one of these throwaway menorahs, I'll get it, I'll take it with me, I'll light the candles, and that's it. I'm going to a wedding. I'll just light the menorah there. I'm going to wait till I get home. Don't bother me. I'll just take it. So again, you have to realize, you can't just light a menorah any way you want. It has to be your house. Now I'll tell you a personal question that I had. My oldest daughter got married on Hanukkah. She got married one of the nights of Hanukkah. And now the thing was that they got married in New York. So the thing was that we left to the hall when it was still the daytime. It was not yet the time to light the Hanukkah candles. Okay? So we went with my daughter, my in-laws went with my son-in-law, and that's the way it was. Now, when a couple is about to get married, when the girl leaves her house to go to the wedding and the boy leaves his house to go to the wedding, they have just terminated their residence in their parents' house.
Hopefully.
Because that's it.
Hopefully.
Right? So that's it. Right? That's it. We're done. We don't live here anymore. Right? In other words, it wasn't so dramatic because we were Russian, but the fact of the matter is that it's an emotional thing. That's it. You're leaving the house for the last time. And so to the boy. So now the thing is, so this presents a problem for them, because now where are they going to light the candles? So they can't light the candles at home,
Can't light the candles at home because they're not there in the Zman. And even if, theoretically, in the middle of the wedding, you're going to run back to the house and light the candles, it wouldn't be good anyway because you don't live here anymore. So now, where do you live? You haven't yet moved into your new place because you got married. That's the way it goes, right? First you leave your house, then you get married, then you go to the new place. The new place is not your house till you move in. Your parents' house is no longer because you moved out. So now what do you do? So,
excluding everything we've said up to this point, I thought you light where you sleep.
You light where you sleep, but the thing is, the question is, so do you wait till then? No. Do you wait till then? And here the question comes up, and let's just say that they're going to a hotel, right? Not going home. They're going to a hotel. Now what do you do?
Excluding.
So I didn't want, I'll tell you what happened by me, and I didn't want to mix in, you know, my son of Baruch Hashem. As a young Tom Kaufman, I didn't want to mix in, but I couldn't control myself completely, so I whispered in my daughter's ear that I really think that when you get to a hotel, you should light a menorah. That's what I said. So my son-in-law asked one of his rabbanim, and he said, light in the hall.
That's right.
Light in the hall. That's right. So my daughter came home and told me this. Wedding hall. So she came home and told me this, and again, I didn't want to mix in, but again, I couldn't control myself. And I said, that's the most ridiculous thing I ever heard in my life. I said, what? You don't live in the wedding hall? What are you talking about? How can you light the menorah in a wedding hall? This is just a... So then, all right, but I wasn't going to mix in. I that was much self-control I had. So I said, you know, whatever will be. So sure enough, I saw that they lit one in the wedding hall. After the chuppah, they lit one in the wedding hall. I didn't say anything. And then, a couple years later, so a sefer was published, which said exactly this psak, right, that they should lie in the wedding hall. And I say, how could that be? So why don't you guys have a better idea? Instead of giving out benchers, why don't we give everyone a little menorah, right? And they'll sit by the table and burn down the hall, right? They'll sit by the table and light their... You'll give everyone, it'll be monogrammed. You'll put the thing, you know, on the little menorah. It'll be a new shtick, right? This is a moneymaker, right? This is my idea. Don't take it, right? I have a patent on this idea. You'll make your own little menorahs. It'll say wedding of so-and-so and so-and-so. And you give them candles, and they'll sit down and burn the light the thing. So can you do that? Right? Can you do that? No. Right? That the answer is no. So the question is, so why not? So they could do it and you can't do it. So I'd like to try to explain this right now. Yeah, go ahead.
With all due respect and seriousness,
yes.
They have Euclid rooms,
yes,
in the wedding hall.
Yes, which they do not own. They don't own it. It belongs to the owner of the hall. That's where they live. But it belongs to the owner of the hall. So where does it come to be the house? Okay, right, there you go. Right, that's right. He'll have a whole legal contract.
That's right.
I'm sure that's exactly what they want to do at the wedding. Start signing legal documents. Yeah, go ahead.
By process of elimination at
yes.
this point in time,
yes.
That's just the closest thing they have to
do. Very good, very good. So that is what Sir Shmuel Kamenetsky, Shalom Yuel, one of the great poskim that we have today in America, he said... That's exactly what he said. He said that in that case, that's the closest thing they have to their own place. In other words, their parents' house is gone. Their new place they haven't moved into yet. So it's not theirs either. So of course, you could theoretically wait till then, but you're not supposed to delay the mitzvah if you don't have to. So he said that, and especially, like I said before, if you're going to a hotel, so even though the minhag is that we do light, and people do light in hotel rooms, but... It's not like the most overwhelming thing it's not like, oh, that's for sure a good place to light. That's not true. In other words, it might be better than the alternatives, but in this case, he said that since the hall for that night is in effect their place, because they're the chas and the kala, they're the whole wedding is being made for them, so that's considered their place. And if on that basis, he said it's actually better that they should light in the hall than that they should light it in the hotel room. Now, what happens if they're not going to a hotel, they're going to their own apartment? So that might be different. But even so, I think the halacha is that it's still, right now, this is, okay, this is your place. This is your place. You don't own it. But on the other hand, you're the Baal Simcha. This is your thing. So this is what they say. I'm just saying, this happens all the time. Right? This comes up every single year. People get married Hanukkah. So what do they do? No one thinks about it. But if you analyze it, This is a real problem. What are you going to do? Unless you know the wedding is very late, then they're still at home by the Zman HaDlakas Neris, but they're very rarely. It'll never happen. You have to be there to take pictures. Forget it. There's no chance, right? So what are you going to do? So this is what they say. Or you could wait till the later. But this is a Psak HaLacha, which I was shocked when I heard it for the first time. But this is what they say. Okay, now, so getting back to the question. So what do you do? So what do you do? The bachelor. Now let's go to the bachelor case. So the bachelor sleeps in a certain house. He has his own apartment, but he can't cook other than a cup of tea. Even that challenging, right? So what does he do? What does he do in that situation? So if he eats, now we come to another halacha, which most people are surprised to hear. If he eats all his meals in one place, let's say he has an arrangement with some family that, I'd like to come and eat here on a regular basis. So then the case could be made that a place where you eat on a regular basis is better than a place where you sleep on a regular basis. Right, and this is again counterintuitive. Most people assume that where you sleep, that's your place. But it depends. So here in this situation, it gets a little tricky because you'll say the place where I sleep is my ownership. I own this apartment, right? The place where I eat, I don't own, but I always eat there. Okay, that's one scenario. Now, a different scenario would be: let's say he has a boarding arrangement that he boards in somebody's house. But they tell him it's only for sleeping, not for eating. And then he has a separate arrangement with the neighbor that he eats by the neighbor's house. So in that situation, he should definitely light where he eats, not where he sleeps. Okay? In a case where he owns the apartment that he's boarding and that he's sleeping in, and just that he's eating someone else's house, is a question. And Rav should be consulted in this case. This is not so simple. But the point is, you have to understand that you have to really, the determination of what's considered your house is a very key determination. Now, what happens to a person going away on Hanukkah? So most people assume, you go away for Hanukkah, so that's it, I went for one night to somebody's house, so for that night, that became my house. I mean, logically, does that make sense? But you went to someone's house, it became your house for that night? Say, well, I'm living here for the night. Okay. So the halacha is, and this is, I know it's way over we're on a later schedule today, but if you turn over the page, so one of the great Sephardic Achronim, Pri Chodesh, who lived in the 17th century, was a very, very greatly respected posek. So he was asked a question about a person who went with his entire family to his parents' house for all 8 days of Hanukkah. Okay, now this is different than a person who just goes away for Shabbos Hanukkah. He went for the entire Hanukkah. He's going to celebrate with his family, his parents, or his in-laws, whatever, on the entire Hanukkah. So the question was, where should he light? So the Pri Chodesh said that it seems to me that in that case, if he's going to be there for the entire Hanukkah, that he should light there. This is what he ruled. Okay, now, what's mysterious about this is when he said that, that's pretty much all that he said. You could read the rest of it, but pretty much. So now the question comes up, when he said, the question that he was asked was when they're going for all 8 days of Hanukkah. So was that just an incidental detail, but really if you were going even for one day it would be the same psak? Or do you say, no, he meant it, that it's only if you're there for the entire Hanukkah. But if you're not, then it's not considered your house. So the poskim here say, most poskim take the strict interpretation that the only time your location truly changes is if you're going away for the entire Hanukkah. So let's say people go on vacation, they go to Eretz Yisrael for Hanukkah, or whatever, go somewhere else, go to California, they like the cold, so they're going to go to New York for Hanukkah and freeze, right? You want to do that. So if you're going for the entire Hanukkah, then you could safely say that this is my house and that's it. But if not, then your original house remains your house. And therefore, it comes out that on this coming Shabbos, if somebody in North Miami Beach is invited to attend a simcha, let's say, in Hollywood, or whatever it is, a big kid at Shabbos Hanukkah, so you're going to go to Hollywood for Shabbos, the correct place to light the candles is in their own house before they leave for Shabbos. That's it. And so it is on any night. If you're going away for the night, let's say, people are going away, whatever, take the family on a little trip, we'll run, make a run over to Orlando for a day or two, and we'll stay in the hotel. So really, the halacha is you have to lie in your house, and that supersedes wherever you're going to be. And the truth of the matter is that you'll say, but I'm not going to be there. So if I'm going into Hollywood, it's not such a big deal because it's 15 minutes away, so I could lie and go or whatever. But let's say you're going to Orlando. So then, preferably, a person should make a shliach. Better than that, he should light the candles in Orlando. It's a chiddush gadol, but it's clearly stated in the Mishnah Berurah. Rather than light the candles where he's going to be, it would be better that he really should get a shliach to light the candles by his house. Now you'll say, what sense does that make if you put the menorah in the house and nobody sees it? So I believe the answer to that is because we don't just put it in the house, we put it by the window also, so people in the street see it. So therefore there is a persume nisa in that case, but if you're going to Orlando, you say, if I make a shliach to light in my house, then really technically I'm off the hook. However, nobody likes that. Everybody likes to light menorahs on Hanukkah. So like we said before, so then you have to do the same thing as if your wife was lighting. You'd have to have in mind and say, I don't want to be yotze with that, or I'm not so sure that's such a good thing to say, but I guess you could say that, right? And then light your own, because according to the Mahadran, everybody should light their own. But it's really complicated. That's really the point I'm trying to bring out. It's not so simple. If you're out of town, if you're completely out of town, then there's nothing you can do. What am I going to do? I can't get home. It's too far away. I'm in Dallas. Let's say not the whole family went to Dallas. I'm in Dallas. And what am I going to do? I'm going to fly home every night of Hanukkah to Miami? It's ridiculous. So I can't do that. So then you could say that, what could you do? I'm a Srechmana Patri. I can't lie to my house. But if a person has the opportunity to light in his house, this is not known to people, it's really better to do that. Now, you'll say, but it's not so easy, because how am I going to get a shliach, and I'm not so comfortable leaving a menorah lit in my house when nobody's home. It'll get knocked over, it happens, it'll get knocked over and cause a fire. Okay, fine. If that's the case, then there's nothing you can do. So then you could also say, Onus Rachmana Patre. Then you'll say, all right, it's out of my control, I can't. But shy of those things, other than that, really a person's house remains his house on Hanukkah. So therefore, just you go into a wedding, so you say, it's going to be a whole late thing, I'm going to get home who knows when, and I'm leaving too early, right? Too early to light. So what are you going to do? You can't light the menorah in the wedding hall, that's for sure not. Right? You're going to a dinner, you're going to a restaurant, you can't light the menorah in a restaurant. It's not your house. The fact that you're eating there this night makes it your house? Of course not. Right, so you have to light in your house. So either you light and then go. Yeah. By the way, once the candles burned for the shir, you could blow them out. That's a clearly stated halacha in the Shulchan Aruch. In other words, the Hanukkah candles only have to burn for a half hour. They have to burn for a half hour after the time of the chiv. So therefore, a half hour after Tzeis Kochavim, okay, at that point, if you want to go out of your house, you absolutely can blow out the candles. Right, there's nothing wrong with that. You're ready to fulfill the mitzvah. So once you fulfill the mitzvah, there's no real hinder in having the candles burn the whole night. People like to do that. It's nice, creates a nice atmosphere. But from a halachic standpoint, it doesn't do anything. Right? In other words, once you yotze, like I should shake a lulav now. Oh, I love the mitzvah so much. So today, so what's that? It's not sukkahs anymore. So once the time for the mitzvah ends, there is no mitzvah. So that you could do, but it's really not simple. If a person is away from home, or a person is going away on Hanukkah, you really have to give thought to this. You really have to give it, where are you going to light? Where are you going to light? In some cases, it could be, you know, the halacha is that in the case of very great need, a person could light the Hanukkah candles from Plag HaMincha. A person can light the Hanukkah candles even before the sunset, as long as you have enough oil that it'll be, a lot of oil, it'll burn all the way, like we do on Friday nights. That's what we're going to do this Friday night. Right, it's before the sunset, you fill up with a lot of oil, where you get very big candles, and they burn all the way. Okay, so a person in a case of great need could do that also. But to just simply say that I'm going away for the night, and therefore wherever I go on this night becomes my new house, that is far from simple that's true. That is highly questionable. And therefore, if your house is within reach, really the right thing to do is to go to light at home either before you leave, or if need be, come back and light. Okay, you'll say, but I want to go away for the night. Okay, so then, if you can get someone to light it for you, it would be better. If you don't want to do that either, because you don't want people in your house, or you don't want to leave candles in your house alone, burning, Okay, so then you can light it where you're going. But to just assume, now this is a common assumption that people make, it's halachically invalid, that just because I'm going away, that means I have a new house now. Something doesn't become your house unless you're there on a regular basis where you have some sort of arrangement. I'll end on this, I know it's late, just a boarder in a house. So if a person boards in a house and eats his meals in that house, he is considered a part of that household, no question. Okay, but if a person, now let's talk about a person going away for Shabbos, and he can't light in his house. He can't. But he's going to somebody's house, not going to a hotel. Going to somebody's house. So can he say that, well, I'm here for Shabbos, so I'm like a member of the household. Granted, this is not my house, but since I am eating and sleeping in this house, so I'm considered like B'nai Bayis, I'm considered like a member of the house of the person I'm staying by. The answer to that is also no. You're not. Because just because you're there for Shabbos, so what? The only exception to that is a married child who returns home, which is very common. Shabbos Chanukah, you go to the parents, to the in-laws. So then, since you're going back to what was originally your house, so then you could be considered 100%. But if you're by somebody's house for Shabbos, and you can't light a menorah in your own house for whatever reason, the correct thing to do is to either give them some coins. By the way, you don't have to give him $100. You give him any amount of money. He doesn't have to add more oil. It's a question of the poskim. That's what we hold. He doesn't have to add more oil, but you have to give him a quarter or a dollar. Say, here, I want a shia. And you have to do this before he lights. It's too late. Once he lit, you showed up 10 minutes before Shabbos. He already is giving you dirty looks. He already lit the menorah. And now you say, oh my gosh, I don't have a menorah. So here's a dollar. Too late. He lit it already. Right? So you have to do it before he lights. But these are questions a person should really consult with a rabbi or look through. The Hilchos Chanukah everyone loves it. It's beautiful yontif, but from the technical halacha, there's a lot of complexity when that comes up when a person is going away, and really a great deal of thought should be given to this. Yeah, Shukar.